Okay.
Well, hello and welcome. This is Sharon Lipinski, author of 365 Ways to Live Generously. And in this book, one of our fundamental habits is the habit of mindfulness. And while I'm an expert on helping you create habits, I'm not an expert on mindfulness. And that is why I'm super excited to welcome our guest today, Joe Samodi. His mission is to help people gain hyper clear insight into their lives. And over the past decade, he has traveled across the United States teaching in a wide variety of settings, giving lectures, offering practices that help people become clear and steady in their mind, help them radiate confidence and purpose, and embody joy. His teachings seamlessly bridge the time-tested wisdom of Hatha Tantra Yoga and the needs of the modern world. He holds multiple certifications in the health and wellness industry. He is a certified yoga teacher with over 1,000 hours of practical teaching, enlightening and helping thousands of individuals. He is a level 1 certified para yoga teacher, a certified life coach, and a level 2 Reiki practitioner. He also holds a 200-hour certification from Sonic Yoga in New York City. And aside from teaching, he also officiates weddings. So, Joe, I know Valentine's Day is right around the corner. I don't know if you have any weddings you're working on. But when he isn't teaching, he can be found on a bike or a long hike, challenging himself to reach new heights. And he equally enjoys a lazy day with his 5-pound chihuahua, Samson, and his husband of 17 years, Kurt. So, Joe, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, Sharon, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to share this wisdom with your audience.
Yeah, so let's talk about how you got into the practice of mindfulness, meditation, and yoga. How did it all start for you?
Well, I think it's important to mention that there is no smooth start to starting a meditation practice. There's no easy path. I have not met an individual who has made meditation a habit effortlessly. And my journey into the practice of meditation was just as fumbly as everyone else's, where you start and stop and you don't understand. And it's a big fat question mark because there's nothing really concrete that's happening that you can really put your finger on and say, wow, you know, I'm losing weight or, you know, I'm making more money. And that abstract quality is what makes people veer a little bit in and out of the practice until they can find some consistency. So it took me some time before I found that flow. And really the biggest emphasis for me was just building a community, building more of a structure around me that allowed me to understand, this is what it's about, or this is where I can practice and live for a while and then amplify my practices more and more through the different teachings that are offered. So, I think the other thing that was really interesting is I didn't understand I had an inner life that was starving for attention. And I didn't know the stimulation inside my body, my nervous system, my thoughts, my experiences, the day-to-day exposure that my five senses are taking in order to have the body organize that and effortlessly move through your life so that it doesn't cause any tensions and stresses and anxieties and depressions and so forth. So I didn't understand all this stuff. And when you start to meditate consistently, you start to pull that apart and get it organized in a way. You can delete the files you don't need anymore. You can amplify the thoughts and the experiences that really do bring you light and joy. So all of that took some time to figure out. But the truth is, once you slow down enough and you realize you have this awesome inner life that's starving for attention and you give it its fair due in your course of your day, then you can start to really make some powerful changes in the external world. And I think we're living in a very interesting time now with the political tensions that definitely are bubbling up, where people are using the external to really become more unsteady, to become less focused, to become more angry. And the reverse is actually true for meditation, is that you go inward, you find your strength through the steadiness of the practice, and then you can articulate that through a lot more grace, a lot more clarity, and a lot more impact.
I love that. because there for a lot of people today, there's not a lot of external stability. But it is inside us if we know where to look for it and we cultivate that. So I'm curious, you didn't realize that you had this inner life. So what prompted you to start getting in touch with it?
Curiosity. People talking about it. Meditations that were being done very lightly during yoga classes. Meaning very short and brief, but even the few minutes were like, oh, what's that all about? And you start to get curious about the meaning of this. And of course, the history of meditation really is our main teacher, is that it's been around so long in so many different lineages. There's so many different styles of meditation. It must bring some level of curiosity to why is it still relevant today? Why is it still living today? And the answer to that, Sharon, is that there are many teachers that have successfully carried that tradition and lineage down to the next students, meaning they've discovered its own power of meditation and the truth of it and the usefulness of it, and so we continue sharing it. And that's the main thing we have to remember, is that the legitimacy necessarily isn't in the science of meditation. It's in the fact that it's been passed down for so long.
Hmm. So we're on the edges of hearing about it and experiencing little tastes of it made you want to go deeper into meditation.
And, of course, the stability of my own life. I knew that I was unhappy and I could do better.
Yeah.
And I needed more direction. And the common wisdom from the yoga tradition is that you are your own best teacher. So, and I think you teach this as well in your work, is that, you know, you need to go inside and figure out what's going on. We're all guiding. We're sort of directing and saying, well, these are some ideas, but only the student really knows what's best.
Right. Right. So I had a similar experience to yours in which I was really unhappy and experiencing one of the questions that I ask, when we're trying to gauge where people are starting from is like, how well do you handle stress? And for me, that was a zero. I handled my stress so badly that I was getting panic attacks. And so one of the benefits from a meditation practice is the impact it has on how we handle stress, or at least that was my experience. Was that your experience as well?
I would just change the question a little bit differently, and I would say, how well do you handle change? And in the sense of change, Trump becomes president, how well did we handle that? It's a reality.
Hmm.
And it's a legitimate reality, and yet people denied that reality. That's not accepting change. That's not being graceful in the face of what really is. And I think Trump is a good example for people to sort of look externally, but if you look internally at your own life, how well do you handle your own change as it happens to you personally that affects you in your life versus with your job or with your kids or just smaller tasks, mundane tasks that you go through your day. There's lots of change that's happening all the time, and we need to be much more sensitized to it. And I think meditation is the vehicle that sensitizes you to change. And then it tells you exactly what you need to focus on in that given part of your life.
So how does meditation sensitize you to change?
Well, you start understanding your body first. And by becoming still, you actually understand that there is this whole apparatus that's inside of you that is constantly giving you signals. I call it the information superhighway. And its vibration is what is giving you the reason to go grab a coffee or have some chocolate or say these words to somebody or react a certain way to an external stimulus. So if you have more control over this apparatus, meaning the muscles, the breath, the mind, then you actually can do better in the world, which is why yoga is such an awesome path, because we say, okay, start with our body, figure out how the muscles work and the ligaments and the joints and how do you twist and forward fold and all that goodness. And we use the body and the breath and the mind to amplify our ability to become still. And then once you're still, you can actually feel the vibration of your own physical being, And you can sense, oh my God, I'm really stressed, or I'm really tired, or I just can't sit still. But you become curious about why the body doesn't want to become still. And the more you figure that out, the better the stillness becomes. And the quality of your stillness becomes the presence, and the presence then amplifies to deeper and deeper teaching. So the point we're always trying to make with meditation is that come back to yourself. Come back to what you know. Come back to the biggest truths, which is, I have a headache, my belly hurts, my heart aches. Those are the truths, and the more you deny those truths, the worse your external life becomes. So we look to turn that around, flip that on its head.
So it's the benefit of meditation comes from the fact that you keep coming back to your own body.
Yeah. And then you become more truthful about what it's experiencing on a moment-to-moment basis. So Vipassana is a great example of a style of meditation that's really just about scanning the present body and mind and just being with the body. And there's a repetition about what they teach you about scanning the body, and you do that over and over and over endlessly, right? Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you reorganize and re-stimulate your awareness of what the body-mind experience is, so that this apparatus actually becomes useful to you, so that you're not slumped over in a chair at 80 years old wondering how did this all happen, because sitting tall in a posture and being still actually gives you a lot of awareness around how your body and mind reacts to external stimulus. So you don't become a victim anymore, and you become stronger in your choices, you're stronger in your thought process. You choose the thoughts that you wish to have. You choose the actions you wish to take you where you want to go. And you know that you have a lot more strength to do that because the body mind's giving you all that valuable information. That information superhighway is really pulsating every moment of your day. And you decide to drive slower. You'll talk a little bit more clearly. You'll decide to go left instead of right. And that decision will help you get closer to where you want to go. And you know it because you're happy. You're more joyful and you're more purposeful in your life. So those are the barometers that if your meditation practice is actually sensitizing you to the right things, then you know your external world is getting a lot easier. So I don't want people to get to this mindset of like life just gets really hard. You grow older in life and, you know, we kind of deplete our energy and get small as we get older. And I see just the reverse. If you meditate long enough and consistently enough, you should get brighter and brighter as you get older. And then, you know, you're sitting on that mountaintop at the last moments of your life, and you're joyful because you've done everything, and you feel completely at ease and content.
One of the things that fascinates me about a meditation and mindfulness practices is that, you know, we are talking about something we're doing with our mind, and yet the impacts that we see from it are not contained to our mind, because, right, we have this mind-body connection, and I think they overlap so much that it's almost futile to kind of separate them and say, this is what happens, you know, this is what your body is doing, this is what your mind is doing. But when we exercise our mind, we experience emotional benefits, but those also have very real physical consequences, like you're saying, with the energy level, with inflammation, with better health, that there are real physical implications to developing a mindfulness practice. Would you agree?
Well, let's just talk about our gut for a second. We have a tremendous gut issue in America. We don't know how to digest our food properly because the food that we eat may not be best for us and our own body. We all have a unique thumbprint, and that thumbprint means our own food needs to be very unique to our own body. And the other digestive issue we're having is emotional and mental. So we're constantly not feeling good in the gut. And that's a great sign for health and happiness to say, oh, I need to make some adjustments. I need to learn how to process my life better. And the body is a huge indicator about where your mind is going to go. And the other lesson we really need to link this to is the fact that the body is the easiest and most accessible way to access the deeper states of mind. So that's why we move the body with the breath in yoga. That's why we deepen the breath. That's why we concentrate the mind specifically on the navel center, for example, in a yoga practice, so that our mind goes down to that place and it explores it like it never explored it before, because your left hemisphere of your brain is constantly telling you all this information. Your cognitive thinking is on overdrive. You're completely disconnected to your gut. So when you say to your mind, go down there, tell me what's going on. Let me feel that. Let the nervous system take over for a second. Let me deepen my breath so I can really feel what it's like to breathe into my belly. Let me still my body enough in this twist so that I can get a deeper sense of what it's like to get more authentically a part of this experience that I'm having in my body as I'm breathing and twisting. So the body then becomes the vehicle to change the mind.
It's interesting. And it reminds me, I just read a study that scientists wanted to compare, you have the placebo pill. So is meditation a placebo? So what they did is they had two groups of people. One, they both did the same set of stretching and exercises, but one was led through this kind of mindful practice where really paying attention to each movement and the body and how the body's responding. And then the other group did the same set of stretches, but they did it while chatting and making jokes. And what they found is that the group who was joking did not experience any of the benefits that the group, they felt better, like more relaxed, but their biochemistry was not showing the reduction in inflammation that the group who was doing their stretching mindfully was doing.
So there's a lesson in yoga we talk about, which is called energy follows thought and thought follows energy. That's pretty easy to understand from any perspective. Like, you know, when you think a bad thought, your body reacts to that thought and you kind of feel icky, and that thought might repeat over and over again. So energy is a thought. Thought is an energy, rather. And if we don't get caught up in energy and what it means, it's just a sensation. It's a feeling. It's an overall sense of where that is going to go. And so we use the body to continually shape the mind, and that's an easier access point for people to understand how energy actually affects us. So one of the things that's missing in yoga and meditation practices primarily is breathing. So we get into a beautiful posture, tall spine, but we're not using the breath to actually amplify a direction of where the energy can go or what you want the energy to go. And what do I mean by that? I mean, are we deepening the breath with purpose? Are we shaping our consciousness around that breath so that we're accessing maybe the deeper regions of the pelvis? You're talking about inflammation, which I'm very grateful for, because inflammation is a huge problem for health, and that relates to a lot of choices that we're making. But you can feel that inflammation much more if you deepen the breath. And you access that part of the mind that brings the nervous system and sensations down to that point of the body. Let's say it's just the pelvic floor area. And you start to notice what's happening down there through the breath. And then you become still after doing some deep breathing. You just relax the body, relax the breath. Then the energy has centered itself into that space, meaning the mind is there. The breath is relaxed into that space, and you're really starting to notice something different. And if I can sum up why we meditate, it's to change our perspective, to shift what we think is important on the external and make what is truly important on the internal much more bright. So just by understanding the system of the body and what the spine is all about and what the muscles do and what the diaphragm does, actually makes us a lot more powerful to normal stressors that happen in your day. And gosh, you know, when that person pisses you off, it's not that big of a deal because you're sensitized enough to the body to know how to maybe make some minor adjustments in your mind or your breath or your physical posture that makes you very adaptable. Like the water running through a river, you can just adapt as it flows over the rocks. You're just adapting. And that's one of the greatest signs of health and happiness, is one who adapts easily to change. Go to a different culture and see how you adapt to change. Go, put yourself in front of Donald Trump and see how you adapt to change. So these are good tests for us to understand truthfully how we're doing in the world. And the better, more steady we are, the more our meditation practice is working.
So we've been kind of hitting on the edges of this, but I think it might help our listeners if we were to give explicit definitions. What is mindfulness and what is meditation? Would you want to take a stab at defining that for our listeners?
Well, many wise people have tried to define meditation. And let's be clear, meditation is the word that we should use universally. And mindfulness is just another branch of meditation. The definition I work with the most with meditation is it's a process of focusing more and more on less and less. And to me, that works because it's about letting go of the things that no longer serve you, because you can focus on the things that actually are important. So let's just start really simple. Any beginner meditation practice will start to feel uncomfortable immediately. And they'll probably feel that discomfort in their spine because they're not used to sitting tall for an extended period of time, let alone being still and sitting tall. That's weird. So you've got to figure that out. And that's the ability to get comfortable in that space so that you can focus on something else. And then that deepens your practice into a different realm. So the more your body becomes comfortable, the more you can work on your internal body, energy and mind. So the practice becomes more amplified and deeper and more impactful overall. The reason why I think people feel deep change and benefits from meditation early on is because it is so radical. You are taking movement and normal external stimulus, and then you're closing your eyes, usually, and becoming still, and that's just radical for the body and mind to experience. And so all the studies I read say, oh, in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, everyone feels different. Well, my mind kind of says, well, I didn't need science to tell me that. It would be very clear to anybody that if you sit still for a consistent period of time, it's going to shake things up in some way, right? It's going to refocus you in some way. And this is why we want to meditate, is because we can't just rely on the external world to give us everything that we need. And I mean everything, because I think most people think that my joy and my sense of self comes extremely from all things on the external. People need to validate my presence. I need to make sure that I'm meaningful in this world. And the only way to do that is by being in this job and having this role and making this amount of money. So that's a false sense of self. And that's why meditation comes back to, hey, look at you, come back to you, inner life, and all that's there that actually is much more true and much more sustainable than anything on the external world.
So what would you say to somebody who would say, oh, I hate meditating?
Then it's not for them.
So some people just shouldn't meditate?
I don't think it's for everyone. I think that we are called on this path for different reasons. And by called, I'm getting a little spiritual in nature, is that everyone on this earth has a purpose. And in yoga, we call that dharma. So I don't think everyone on this earth is meant to meditate, nor do I ever think everyone is meant to be enlightened. I think we all have different functions, and I would urge all of your listeners to find their purpose. And if meditation helps them with their purpose, great. But I think if we force meditation on ourselves, we're doing more of a disservice to our lives. It has to feel like it's a call to action, to the realities of your life. Depression's not getting any better. My anxiety's not getting better. You said it yourself. You were having these panic attacks. So you're like, well, what can I do? Well, there's lots of things to do, Sharon. We could do deep relaxation practices. That could help. I mean, it's somewhat meditative to lay on the floor and follow a guided voice and music. That's helpful too. But I wouldn't want to make people feel guilty for not meditating. And so by making the statement that everyone should meditate makes people feel that they're feeling that they're less than. So I encourage people to be inquisitive about it, but let the call come to them.
So one of the things that I'm picking up on here is that there's more than one way to practice mindfulness. There's more than one way to kind of maybe tap into this inner life and focus more and more on less and less. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a meditation practice.
I truly believe that, Sharon, and I believe that if we're inquisitive and curious enough about our life and really do care about this mind and body that we have the one chance to live in this lifetime, this cycle, then we'll look for all ways, whatever calls us, and what culture that you're living in, and what environment that you're surrounded by, and the support system that you have, you are going to use whatever you have at your best disposal to help yourself. Herbs are wonderful. Counseling is wonderful. Just deep breathing without meditation is awesome. So there's just so many ways to tap in. And what I mean by this comment is that just get curious and do something. Don't be inactive. Mindfulness can be in many forms, but just be actively mindful every day. And be curious every day, and that mindfulness and curiosity will lead you towards this unfolding that may lead to meditation down the road as you continue to want to control the aspects of your mind. I mean, a clear, calm, and tranquil mind is what we all deserve, but it could be achieved in many ways. I will say, if I'm going to advocate for meditation, that meditation is the fastest way to get a clear, calm, and tranquil mind, but it's not the only way.
So other examples would be like, so for example, if you're an artist and you're creating art, or you're athletic, being very involved in a specific type of sport, or running, or walking, hiking, time outdoors, sitting on a park bench, these are all different ways in which you can experience more tranquility, more peacefulness, and be more absorbed in the present moment.
Well, yes, you're pinpointing a lot of great things about what hobbies do and just getting completely absorbed in something that you love, which of course quenches the soul and the heart and makes joy such an easy thing. But one of the hiccups with that scenario is that we can't just use the external stimulus to create the joy. So I'm only happy if fill in the blank. Or I'm only peaceful if these circumstances exist. And one of the curiosities that I want your listeners to have is, what do I need so I don't, what can I create inside of me so I don't need the external to be a certain way in order for me to be happy and joyful? And I think that takes some time to figure out, but we don't want to get caught in the box where if we're traveling and we're not near our resources of hobbies or loves that we're going to be miserable. And I know these people personally that feel this way, is that that's not a way to thrive. We should be able to adapt effortlessly. So the inner body and mind actually continues to give us that information we need in order to become stable and steady and resilient in whatever situation we're in. I think what you're cluing into, though, Sharon, is something where if you know you're having that experience of joy when you are playing a sport or are doing a hobby, that's a good indicator of what it feels like to be completely present and absorbed and joyful. But realize that that's not really a great formula if it's only that thing. So we want to be sure that we're much more open and to receiving other things that makes us joyful all the time.
And so the advantage of a meditation practice, it's kind of like an exercise practice that you know that during this period of time, I have some structure and organization around improving my physical health. And then with a mindfulness practice or a meditation practice habit, that you have this structured, consistent time in which you will be focusing on your mental, emotional, spiritual health. That.
There's just nothing. There's nothing else like it. I mean, we don't give our mind the due that it needs on a daily basis. We don't give it the like, we're not in awe of it. We take it for granted that it does all of these non-linear thinking, and, you know, it has this great resource of memory, and you're not aware of its function.
Yeah.
And its impact. So I always go back to something like meditation that gives you better understanding of what the function and the purpose of your mind is, and the fact that you're actually not tapping into the full potential of the mind by just being really smart. I mean, I know so many Google smart people in the world that just put me in awe. I'm like, wow, you'd be able to, you know, you are a resource in and of itself. I could just be with this person and they could share endless amounts of knowledge with me. But the knowledge doesn't get you to the happiness, and the knowledge doesn't get you to contentment and freedom and joy. You need some knowledge, but what I'm cluing into is you need experience, and the mind and the meditation and the body understanding of, I call these things blending together, gives you that experience that no Google can give you, no book can give you, and you need to own that experience. And the ownership becomes true when you're consistent with any practice that's going to focus and strengthen the mind like meditation does, so that you can take that out and give that back to the world. And I just urge your listeners to ask themselves, how important is my mind to me? How strong do I want my mind to be? And am I just strengthening my mind in one way, doing the same exercise over and over again, which is just getting more factual information into my mind? Because there's other kinds of experiences that the mind can have that will make you equally as smart. Even though the external world may not validate that wisdom, that smartness, you will know inside of you how smart you are, because you're making really good choices for your life. And to per your goal with your audience is to make good habits. You will make your habits happen faster if you know how your mind is functioning on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. Is it clear today? Is it focused today? And if it's focused on good stuff versus bad stuff, am I spitting in a thought? You got to understand how that works. And nobody can really teach you until you sit in a still posture and quiet yourself enough to know.
And I'll just kind of add to that kind of idea of you have to experience it. I don't feel personally like I don't know. I think some people may have like insights or enlightenments while they're meditating. I don't feel like I've ever experienced any of that. And it's hard for me to kind of look back and pinpoint and say like, oh, well, you know, this thing happened because of meditating. And yet when I kind of look back over my own personal meditation journey, I know for sure that I feel calmer, I feel happier, I feel more focused, that I experience all these results, but it's kind of just like a muscle that's kind of grown over time without, you know, any flash of brilliance that, you know, or insight that's happened along the way.
I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because one of the common errors that people are looking for to their meditation practice is to have an experience that's, you know, something they can verbalize to a friend. You know, I had this out-of-body experience. I had this blissful thing happen in meditation. And the truth is, even if you had that experience and it is real and true to you, it's not going to radically change your life tomorrow. And what you said is so beautiful, because it's the summation of the practice, really. It's the accumulation of the practice. And that's what's really hard for us to trust when we begin a practice. But just to be super clear, we're not looking to create an experience in meditation. We're not looking to get anywhere. Even though every meditation is guiding you somewhere, which is so counterintuitive, you are really trying to be as effortless as possible by not trying to go to some kind of kaleidoscope experience and see all these different colors and I was visiting my dead grandmother and all this kind of stuff. You really want to stay in the present as much as possible and be with the mind and body as much as possible, and let that take you someplace different, but not lose yourself in it, and don't get too caught up in the whole the analytics of meditation, because there's no happy place when you're analyzing meditation. It's an endless loop of questions and gray matter. So
I just want to share a quick personal story that just popped into my head, which is if I were to kind of like look back and say, how has my meditation practice been the most useful? It's been my ability to stay present in the midst of difficulty in my life. And I noticed that when my mother was dying, and to be there with her, to be there for her, to be there with my family and for my family, before I started meditating, if this had happened 10 years ago instead of 2 years ago, it would have been such an entirely different experience. But this practice of noticing what was going on in my body, noticing what was happening with my emotions, I mean, obviously my mother died, so it wasn't a great experience, but it was a meaningful experience. And I felt like meditation was absolutely the reason why I was able to make that a present and meaningful experience for me.
And it's just because your inner life was fed and had been fed for those 7 to 8 years prior to your mother's passing. And you understood, you had some relationship to your inner life. And that gave you a different navigation and a different compass to explore those feelings and actually process grieving in a different way. So I urge your listeners to say, wait a minute, do I understand I have an inner life? Do I know what that feels like? And how connected am I to it? Because, you know, the chances are we're somewhere in the middle of that. Like, we kind of know, but we don't know. So get clear on what that is doing on a day-to-day, moment-to-moment basis. And that presence that you're talking about is really about having more information. And more information is more power. And more power means greater choices in life. So we just want to say, look, I want to have a better menu in which to function from. And if I understand I'm gripping my steering wheel every time I'm driving on this highway, it's probably a good indication of something going on that you might want to address that's going to become super hard to fix when you're 80, because by that, it'll be so ingrained in you that you won't even know the difference anymore, and you will be a victim to your body. You will be a victim to your mind. And that doesn't sound like a prosperous way to live. You want to be able to say, no, I understand my body-mind relationship. I understand what's going on inside of me. And I can make adaptations and adjustments along the way to make my life easier and more effortless.
And coming back to this idea we talked about in the very beginning about how well do you handle change? Because through this practice of meditation, you're noticing the change that's happening constantly. So then you can take that experience and apply it to this situation where like things are changing, like my mom is dying, so things are literally at this point in time changing on a daily basis, and then in the last week, like, things were changing daily, then hourly, and then minute by minute, and so to be able to recognize that change is happening, how am I reacting to this change, how do I want to be reacting to this change, that it's like you practice that in your meditation practice, you build that muscle, and then you can take it out into quote unquote the real world, and it's helpful there too.
Beautifully said.
So let's give some practical advice. How do people start a meditation practice? What should they do first?
Start simple and short. Time is the biggest conundrum. People don't think they have the time, or they can't make the time. So we need to figure out in your schedule when you're going to do that, how long you're going to do it for. And I really encourage people not to get into a complicated routine, not something long. I understand there's a lot of styles out there that are encouraging 20 minutes a day for 2 times a day. I don't think that's a great way to start. And my own experience with students and friends is that they don't maintain that. So it's nice for a while, but it's hard to maintain. So let's think simple, time-wise, practice-wise. So 5 minutes, and this is from the smartest people I know in the meditation world, 5 minutes for a year would make a world of difference. And if we can say to ourselves, I have 5 minutes every day, then you know that the schedule can be adapted and that you can make the commitment to yourself. And what would you be doing for 5 minutes? My advice is deep breathing. 2.5 of that minutes could be just deep breathing. And then the other 2.5 could be just settling into your body. And there's a world of knowledge and world of awareness that comes from that. That is enough to get you curious, and then you can start to explore styles and teachers and communities. But ultimately, I would encourage people to start on their own and just create the structure and figure out what's going to work for them and go from there.
So we just start from the understanding that any amount of meditation is better than none. So 1 minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever, any time is better than none. So find a minimum amount of time that you could do every day.
And be consistent with that time. So really commit to it. Use the Insight app. Use your own timer on your phone or whatever just to say, I'm sitting for 5 minutes, go. And it really, it's like going to the gym for the first time. My God, it's overwhelming. All this equipment and this, you know, the TVs and the noise and people, you know, making sounds as they lift heavy weights. It's overwhelming. So just take it your first year as really just being, I'm just going to figure this out and how it fits into my life. And then once you get the 5 minutes a day for 365 days, then you can amplify and go from there. What we tend to do is we want to look for the results. We want to go to the list of benefits for meditation and say, ah, I'm experiencing half of these. Great. And I'd say forget the benefits. Just focus on the fact that the practice is still here today after thousands and thousands of years, and there's tons of evidence out there that that proves that it's worth doing from scientific research. And then just trust the fact that we were talking about it today. So just doing it and starting to build that faith through your own 5 minutes a day for 365 days is what's going to help you. And do it in a chair. Don't sit on the floor and be in pain. Sit in a chair, feel up, you know, be supported, upright. If you're not in your body and you don't understand it enough, then just, you know, find something that works for you. And over time, guess what? If you hold this space for 5 minutes every day for even a half a year, I guarantee you teachers are going to come into your life. A workshop will happen to, you know, come on your doorstep. Some friend will start talking about meditation. All these things will start to unfold because, I mean, the simple fact that you're choosing to do this in a really committed and loving way to yourself and to your mind and body.
So be open to the journey and how that meditation practice might change over time.
Absolutely.
So I know that there are lots of different styles of meditation out there. How do you know which one is right for you?
Oh, that's such a great question, Sharon. You have to try the shoes on and see how they fit. I tried open-eyed meditation, for example, for a while. And by open-eyed, I mean that some styles encourage you to have sort of a half gaze, if you will, so that you're relaxed with your eyes, but you're kind of looking forward at an object. So these are object-centered meditations. They're very valid. They work for some people. I hated it. I just didn't get it at all. And I really wanted to close my eyes. You know, I'm like, you know. And so you're like, well, this is not the way it's supposed to be. And just relax and let it go. It's a shoe. It doesn't fit. Try something else. And there's so many styles out there and great resources on the web. And I'd love to refer to this website if you don't mind. Liveanddare.com. Liveanddare.com has a wonderful page. If you click on the meditation section of this website, on the styles of meditation, on the research of meditation, it's so complete. I cannot find anything quite like it. At least it's a great resource to look at every style and research that's been done on those styles, and it's very comprehensive. So if you're really interested in meditation, go to liveanddare.com and check out what they have there.
And also, let's let our listeners know how they can find your website and how they can find out more about you.
Well, I encourage people to explore meditation through a challenge, and I have offered different kinds of challenges throughout the year, challenges that could be short in just weeks, or it could be months and months, depending upon your journey, where you are. And really what I'm trying to create is a community, teacher-student relationship, get accountability in there, and then obviously build your knowledge base on what this all means and kind of get a a better understanding of your experiences and then you sharing them with me. So my website's 2020yoga.com. It's the 2020 yoga, and 2020 meaning perfect vision, perfect clarity on life, perfecting your lens on life. On that website, you can go to my challenge page and check out my offerings there for just diving into some of the more formal structured things. But I also want to offer that I have a free page where you can download some free meditations and just explore what my voice sounds like and the style of meditation. And I have some deep breathing and relaxation practices on there as well. So that's a great place to just kind of dip your toe in.
That's great. So anybody who's heard me talk about habits will hear me say that repetition is the mother of habit. So these meditation challenges are a great way to build that, to experience that repetition, to build that neural pathway inside your brain so that meditating doesn't have to be something that you force yourself to sit down and do. It can be something that just kind of happens naturally. So definitely go check out 2020 Yoga. And check out those meditation challenges. And Joe, I just want to thank you so much for sharing with us your knowledge and your experience about meditation. I really appreciate it.
I've really loved this. It's been a great conversation. Thank you for having me.